Okay. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Phil.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, Phil.
I'm very excited about this group. I love starting a new Be Better group because even though the curriculum is laid out in advance in my mind, the personalities and the people's circumstances really contribute to making this group kind of take on a life of its own. And after speaking to some of you guys individually, I just feel like we've got a great group here. So today, I want to teach you to have more time. That would be nice, right?
Yes.
And I also want to get you angry. If I do both of those things, if I can teach you to have more time and I can make you angry, then you are primed to succeed in this program. So before I set out to piss you off, allow me to share a little bit of perspective. A few months ago, I had a long talk with somebody who is very high up in terms of visibility and influence in the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. And there are so many things taking place right now that make this the ideal time for us to work together with medicine to establish a new platform of excellence. Now, as this conversation that I was having continued, it became apparent that a segment of the medical community is ready to acknowledge the miracle that we've had in our control all of this time. That is the curative properties of teaching people to put together in the right way supportive eating and supportive exercise. Now, over the last 3 years, I have done over 35 presentations for medical groups. And I keep getting invited, and I love that. I love now speaking to medical groups because I love to bring about that mindset shift in doctors. My role is to change the thought process. I want to change the way they think. These doctors are very good people, but they're the players on an outdated battlefield. And the drug companies and the insurance companies have more control than either the patients or the medical practitioners. So I have a solution that restores power appropriately. If you know me, you know this is not blowing my own horn. I've been working hard to make this happen, and it's starting to happen. Here's the challenge for me. Although I continue to be invited to speak in front of medical groups, I have never once been asked to speak about the virtues of personal trainers. Never. I've been asked to present exercise and nutritional interventions. I've been asked to present on protocols to cure disease. So they're looking at me as some kind of expert, but they are not seeing me as representative of a personal trainer. I'm an anomaly. See, my vision includes having doctors and trainers sitting shoulder to shoulder as peers. And right now, neither industry is prepared for that. Doctors don't respect personal trainers. And I know somebody always wants to jump in and go, no, I have a doctor who respects me. I'm sure you do. But globally, most doctors don't think of personal trainers as professional. So somebody has to step up and lead from the front. And that's what I hope all of you are about to do. Now, there is good news. Over the past 4 years, in working through Be Better to develop some trainers, I've created a group of personal trainers who are masterful, who are confident, who are prosperous, and who are growing. Jim Beatty, are you with us?
Yes, Phil, I'm here.
Okay, Jim, I'm going to ask you in a moment to introduce yourself. I just wanted to make sure you're here so I didn't say Jim. Okay?
Yep.
When I developed these trainers, who I now say are confident, prosperous, and so on, I didn't find them that way. They didn't come to me saying, I'm prosperous, Phil. I want to join Be Better. I found them with desire and humility. They were all humble. And they all had a willingness to stretch. And together, we created this platform of excellence that is now Be Better. And as I now see what is possible, as the Be Better family develops, I feel that I have to be more discerning than ever in who I bring in. I want everyone who ever goes through Be Better to have a greater control, to have a higher standard, and a greater sense of prosperity than the ordinary personal trainer. None of you should ever again be an ordinary personal trainer. And when I say that, although you think you're extraordinary, the question is, are you perceived that way? We want the Be Better trainers to command respect, to feel a genuine confidence, and to feel secure in knowing that they are rewarded financially, emotionally, in every way possible for the extreme value they deliver. So this is, for you guys, the next step in getting there. I've spoken to you guys personally. As I said, I feel like this is an incredible group, and I honestly believe this group may have the potential to be the best Be Better group yet. And part of that has to do with me getting better at filtering and fielding and screening. I've turned away most of the people who had interest. Many of them couldn't even articulate a goal. Everybody here was able to articulate a want, a goal, an aspiration. Believe it or not, most trainers couldn't. When I would ask them to tell me where they'd like to be, they would tell me where they don't want to be. They go, oh, I don't want to have debt. I say, okay, and that's a different question. That's what do you have in your life that you want to get rid of? I'm asking you, where would you like to be? They can't answer it. And many of them are not really doing this full-time, although at first they pretend they are. So you guys are the rare few, and I'm telling you, I have really searched to find you guys. I want you to understand that. I've turned away trainers who were not as committed as you, who were too controlled by fear, or who couldn't articulate any sense of a future or a vision. Or I turned away those who had a little too much ego jumping out in front of them. So as today became closer, I had many conversations, and with each one I decided it best not to allow anyone into this group who doesn't have the stuff I'm looking for, the raw material from which the Beyond Better trainers were created. Now, Jim Beatty is one of the Beyond Better trainers. That means he went through Be Better, and then he repeated the curriculum as a mentor, and then there's a step beyond. And that's when you have a sense of mastery of the principles, you can go into this group called Beyond Better. Now, let me give you a little prelude before I introduce Jim and before I get into the meat of the call today. While all of the previous Be Better programs were 8 months, this one will run 10 months. So the topics that I typically share in call number one now become the topics for call number three, because I've added some material before. Call number three is a powerful call. You will come to understand mindset in a way you've never imagined before. You will see mindset as something that is tangible, something that is pliable, something that is fixable. I would say you will see mindset as putty that you can shape if you understand its anatomy. And there is an anatomy of mindset. So that'll happen next month. Everything we're going to share this month will better prepare you to maximize the value of that information when I share it with you. Now, in my past experience, it would take about 90 days for the group to really bond. Stacy, would you say that's about right? At the beginning, people are sort of iffy, and then 90 days in, they start to connect?
You see a big difference at that point. I think everybody starts to really participate and interact.
In past groups, I think, in talking to some of the trainers individually, each one of them would feel like they are one individual in a sort of sea of trainers. And they'd all think, well, I'm not up to par with the other people here. Maybe I'll say the wrong thing. I want to get past that immediately. I don't want to take that 90 days until we start to know each other. So in the past, it has taken some time until some emerge as being more vocal, and then honestly, in a few of the groups, some of them just kind of fade into the background. This call, I want all of you to participate equally. I'm going to ask you questions. I want you to answer them. If it feels uncomfortable, get over it, quick. That will change. It may feel uncomfortable now. You feel like, why is Phil singling me out? Why is he asking me this silly question? You got to have a little bit of trust, because that apprehension will go away, and it'll go away very quickly. You won't need the 90 days. So I'm going to start by asking you some questions, most of them perspective questions or opinion questions, so there's not a wrong answer. I want you to be brutally honest. You don't have to filter it. You don't have to think, what does Phil want me to say? What is the right thing to say? I just want you to go with your gut. And don't try to think about the answers I'm looking for. I'm telling you, there are no answers I'm looking for. I just want your perspectives. So this is your starting point. This is your baseline. So be open, be forthcoming, and be genuine. Now, speaking of open and forthcoming and genuine, Jim Beatty. Jim is a Philadelphia guy, and he came to me very much as you guys did. And I think I might have first met Jim at one of my conferences years ago. Is that right?
Yep.
And he joined the Be Better group, and then he went through it a second time as a mentor, and then he evolved into Beyond Better. So, Jim, can you speak briefly, just from your own experience, about what these new Betterites are in for? And maybe you can also speak about the value of the connections and the interactivity of the group.
Sure. It's definitely the best thing I've ever done as far as a professional move. When I came to be better, I was confident in my own skill as a trainer. But the tools that I learned from you and that I continue to learn from you every day, which is why I'm still in the group, continue just to make me better. I knew nothing of mindset, and I knew very little about the business side of training and how to maximize your time and your affiliations and different things like that. So just everything that I continue to learn from you just made me better at what it is I do, both understanding myself as well as understanding who it is I'm working with.
And Jim, which be better were you in, 3 or 2?
I was in 4.
You were in 4. Okay. Now, at the beginning, if you can think back, were you sort of apprehensive at first about, you know, jumping in, chiming in, asking questions, sharing comments?
Absolutely. And I think it's exactly how you said it, that you're kind of wary about where you fall among everyone else. And, you know, you don't have to feel that way.
Yeah, now that you're wiser, I want you to encourage these guys. Because I think, you know, as you become more vocal, the group becomes more valuable, right?
Absolutely. And realistically, I mean, I try to step up for anything that you ask from us now, because I've put almost absolute trust in what your vision is and what the steps are that you've laid out for us to develop us into, you know, the trainers and the model that you see we ought to be. So I'm up for
and
pretty much anything now.
There is a tremendous amount of integrity built into this program, and I don't mean only from you. I mean from everybody connected. So there comes a point that your guard goes down completely, and I think Jim will acknowledge that people have shared things in some of these Be Better groups that they probably wouldn't share with their closest friends, because there's a level of trust, and everybody's got your back. So I'm telling you, this is the way it's going to go. I'm asking you to make it happen from the very beginning. Okay, so I'm going to ask everybody to just step up. You know, don't hold back. All right, Jim, thank you. I appreciate it. You're welcome to hang around the call and chime in anytime you want, okay?
Thanks, Phil.
Okay, now, for the rest of you, so you're prepared, I'm going to ask you to answer some questions. As I ask the questions, or maybe I'll provide topics for discussion, I'm going to ask that nobody uses the Me Too answer, or nobody can say, he took my answer. So if I say, Renata, what
yes.
do you think about X? And she tells me exactly what she thinks about X. She says, it comes before Y. And then I say, great. Now, Jason, what is your opinion of X? And he says, she took my answer. Ah, Jason's disqualified. Cannot do that. You got to come up with another answer. Because I want to know what's going on with you. There will be lots of overlap in the answers, but if someone else answers the way that you were going to answer, here's what I'm asking you to do. Think harder. I'm asking you to stretch. I'm going to make you uncomfortable with very good intentions. Now, when I ask the questions, there is an advantage to answering first. It prevents someone else from taking your answer. So if I ask a question, jump right in. Don't filter your answers. It's built upon honesty. There is nothing you cannot ask, nothing we cannot discuss. And through the 10 months, beginning now, we will discuss everything from emotions to religion, from political correctness to the desire for money, from the brain to the mind, from the heart to the bank account. Every group, although it's built upon the same foundational curriculum, takes on a life of its own, and that life starts right now. So with that out of the way, let's get started. I want to begin by asking you to share one thing that disgusts you. Something that disgusts you. Now, we already started the process. You posted your thoughts on some things that frustrate you. Everyone seems equally bothered by the low barrier of entry in our field, by how fragmented our industry is, and by how lesser professionals are often looked at as representatives for what we do. So that was a warm-up, and it was a good one. Now I want you to think beyond just frustration. You're going to learn in this program, beginning today, that emotions serve you if you learn how to steer them. We often feel like victims of our emotions, and we accept that. You know, oh, well, she's doing that because she's depressed. Well, depressed is an emotion. And here's what I'm telling you. If you can control your emotions, you can control your outcomes. And the emotions that we typically think of as negative can be the greatest fuel in moving toward those things that we most want for. And frustration is one such emotion. Frustration wouldn't exist if you couldn't formulate a want or a goal. There's an undeniable connection between the power of your frustration and the willingness you choose to access in moving toward what you really want. Frustration is a feeling that comes along with the sense that we've been prevented from achieving something. So if there were nothing you want to achieve, you couldn't possibly feel frustration. Let's say you get a new home theater. You spend $5,000. And you get home and you're hooking up your new home theater and you have more plugs and wires than you have places to put them. And you can't get the remote straight. And what needs batteries and what doesn't? And you have to put the VCR on top of the Xbox if you want them to both plug into the cable box. And if you try for 2 hours to get this craziness right and you hit the remote and nothing happens, you're frustrated. Because the goal was to get this working. If you didn't have that goal, then you wouldn't be frustrated. You go, okay, I threw some wires around. But the goal is to get this thing working, and something's preventing you from getting there, so you're frustrated. If we look at it with greater clarity, we can think beyond the goal just being, let's get this working. Maybe the goal is you sitting on the couch, hitting the volume on the remote, listening to the surround sound with the bass woofers and seeing the high-definition picture from the movie Avatar. Or maybe it's a vision of your closest friends coming over to drink Amstel Light and watch the NBA playoffs, and you'll all have a great bonding experience. So if that's the goal, and you're trying to get everything hooked up, and it's not going the way you want it to, you get frustrated. You have the goal, you have the attempt, and then you'd have those stupid wires and those undecipherable instructions in six different languages, and ultimately you wind up frustrated. So, in that case, what would we do? Well, if you spend $5,000 on this home theater, it isn't likely that you'll let the frustration shut you down. I don't think anyone would just throw up their hands and abandon the vision of the experience. The frustration would lead you to a different attempt. So after you try for 2 hours, you might go, oh, I'm so frustrated. There has to be a part two. I'm so frustrated, so I'm going to blank. The more frustrated you become, the more aggressive you may become in seeking solutions. So if there's a deadline, like the NBA playoffs, the frustration becomes greater, and it drives you to act even more aggressively. So what would you do? Maybe you'll call a professional. You'll call the guy from the local home theater shop, and you'll bitch and you'll moan that you received a bill for $350, but when all is said and done, you're watching Avatar, and you're loving it. So we've got to learn to do that with our lives. We've got to learn to do that with the things we really want, to get past that point of frustration and not let it shut us down. When it comes to sharing frustrations, and you guys shared your opinions in the discussion board, most of you indicted elements of this industry, and justifiably. The thing that's missing is, why does that frustrate you? How does it get in the way and prevent you from achieving a goal? You know, if you go, well, I'm really frustrated because there are so many trainers out there who don't represent us well, and they take a weekend workshop and they think they're competent. There's another part to this. If that's going to frustrate you, you have to be able to answer the other part. How does that get in your way? Because if it didn't get in your way, you wouldn't be frustrated. How does it prevent you from achieving a goal? And in that lies yet another challenge. Unless you have a goal, unless you can crystallize what you want, you can't leverage the power of frustration. Stay with me. This will all become intuitive. Right now, because frustration is a sort of smoldering emotion, you know, one that has a bit of a fuse, like it could grow slowly, we don't have the time on this call to get all of you guys really frustrated. It would take too long. So I want to go beyond. I want to go to something that has greater impact than frustration. I want you to think about something that disgusts you. Disgusts you. I can say things that would summon up what I call word pictures. I'd say words and something would show up in your head and it would make you feel disgust. And if I say these things, they aren't pleasant things. But they're things that you have such a distaste for, they nauseate you or they sicken you. What are some of those things? I could mention a pedophile. I could mention an intestinal worm that eats people from the inside out. Or I could ask you to picture yourself being kissed passionately by a 90-year-old man without any teeth. Now, those simple words for most of you cause disgust.
Especially Gemini.
You found it, which part did you find disgusting? The 90-year-old man kissing you?
Yeah.
What if he had teeth? Would that change things?
No.
Okay. If something disgusts you, and it's something you can leverage, so thankfully the 90-year-old man is not trying to kiss any of you right now. If you can leverage this disgust, it'll give you a bit of a head start, a power, a kick that allows you to tap into some subtle but powerful emotional triggers. So I apologize if I just made you sick or nauseous, but now that you get a sense of the emotion of disgust, I want you to try to tap into it. The question is, what disgusts you? Now, I'm going to ask you to start by saying your name and where you're from, then just tell me one thing that you find appalling. Ideally, something that you witness that relates to what we do for a living. And then I'm also going to ask you to expand on it. Like if you were to say boogers, I'm disgusted by boogers. I'd say, okay, but that's not enough. Don't just say boogers. If that's your choice, tell me whose boogers disgust you, why they disgust you, and what reaction beyond disgust you experience. Now, don't say boogers. I said that one already. Maybe you want to talk about something you see other trainers do. Or maybe you're disgusted by something you see consumers fall for. I know I am. Or maybe you're disgusted by a state of mind that pervades our population. This is not the forum for it, but I will tell you that I received probably 400 emails today asking me about the HCG diet. Disgusts me. Now, I have answers. But the bottom line is the reason I came up with these answers is because the whole thing disgusts me, that people are falling for this stuff. So what disgusts you? Maybe it's moms feeding their kids bacon burgers and fries and milkshakes. You know, maybe you see that. You see the overweight mom at the fast food place, and then I'd have to question, what are you doing at the fast food place, feeding the kids the bad stuff. Or maybe it's the abuse that you see people subjected to on shows like The Biggest Loser. Now, I'm going to tell you, I never watched The Biggest Loser. I don't say it's bad. I never watched it. I started watching the first few minutes of the first show, and I turned it off. I said, you know, I just don't want to watch this. It disgusts me. Doesn't mean it should disgust everybody, but for me, I have no interest in watching it. In fact, I choose not to. So, what disgusts you? Who's first? I'm only going to ask for one right now, but let's see who will be the first one to step up. Say your name and where you're from.
This is Tasso from Ormond Beach.
Tasso?
I'm disgusted by many personal trainers are gypsies, they're judgmental, and they're egotistical because of the way they conduct their business. They go into facilities. If they don't mind it to help the overall picture of the organization, and they're egotistical in that if a person doesn't get results, it's their fault. If a person doesn't want to look like they look, then they're not good enough. And then that's the judgmental part. And then their ego is, well, I shouldn't be wasting my time on you. It disgusts me because our profession that we've chosen should at its roots be something that wants to help people improve themselves, take them where they're at, and move them cautiously or aggressively, whatever their disposition is, towards being better.
Tasso, how does that manifest in your world? In other words, you know, you've suggested something that is global, you know, that there are people who. But how about in your experience? Where do you see these people? Like, where do they have the opportunity to disgust you?
Well, I see them more in competitors, and I see them also in applicants, the people that come to work for me in my system. We won't hire a lot of those people because they come in because they think they have a really good body that I should instantaneously hire them, or they think they have some good credentials, or they were this or that in a bodybuilding competition that we should be cowbelling to them to come work for us, where one of our models is do your best every day, not you don't have to be a superstar. Because it's about the people skills that you bring and the care you have for people that's important to our business model to be successful. So it disgusts me when I see it being prevalent and even our competitors being prevalent there, which ruins the industry of personal training when, you know, I see club owners come and purchase a club and they say, listen, we can't live with this arrangement you have. And the guy just up and leaves and he hurts that guy's club business. That hurts the whole – hurts club business, hurts the personal training model because these guys move from club to club or they – you know, they very rarely invest in the environment that they're in. They don't invest to for the common good of everybody.
Okay. You're obviously emotional about that. You know, I can hear it in your voice. I can hear it in the words that you're choosing. So thank you for sharing that. And I think many of the people are listening, nodding their heads. The big question is, would you rather kiss one of those disgusting trainers or a 90-year-old toothless man? And we'll come back to that question. Okay. Let's put disgust aside for the moment, and now we can begin to explore the quality of the service we provide. So, Tasso, at some level, that ties into this, right? You're talking about egos and arrogance, but the bottom line is many of these people, their ego is very solid, but they don't have the ability to deliver a quality of service, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So who can share an example, someone other than Tasso, ideally from something you witnessed firsthand, of the difference between mediocrity and excellence? I'm going to ask somebody here to share any example, and you can choose any example, but as an ideal, you'll choose something that you witness firsthand that illustrates the difference between mediocrity and excellence. Can anybody do that?
This is Carissa. I can do that.
Okay, please do, Chris.
I have a trainer that works for me now, and when I got here, he had been training for about 7 years. He took a training course online, and he basically was stealing from the company. He was getting checks written to him when he felt like it, and I had to do everything in my power to overcome that. And he thinks he's the greatest trainer in the world, and that he deserves to be able to do that, and you can't say anything to him. And he's definitely an example of that, I think.
So he's mediocre at best?
I wouldn't even give him that. He's a manipulator. That's the word for him.
Okay. So he's an exceptional manipulator,
exceptional,
but in terms of him being a trainer, he's barely at mediocrity, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Share an example of something that you witnessed that you can use it to say, here's the difference between being mediocre and being excellent.
I can
share something, Phil.
Okay.
Renata.
Who is this? Renata.
Renata. One of the things that I find as a trainer that really bothers me is when you are working at another facility, or say in my case, I train people at a studio where every month, because the studio is not doing well, I feel like that the owner takes advantage of the fact that I have a high clientele and keeps changing the cost of how much I have to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
And it frustrates me because out of all the trainers that are independent trainers that are there, I'm bringing in more business than anybody else, and I constantly get charged more and more and more and more because his business isn't doing so well.
So in a sense, you're being punished for delivering a level of excellence.
It feels that way to me.
Okay.
And it makes me very, very angry.
Good. That's what I'm looking for. Just wait till the end. You'll be really pissed. Somebody else, I want you to do something different. I want you to choose one client, any client. Give me a first name. And I know somebody started to speak at the same time Renata did, so whoever that was, now's your chance. I want you to take one client into the future. Just explain how the future would look. If you can, you'd present this in a definite prediction of outcome. In other words, I have this client. Her name is Mary. She's been on 17 diets. She's finally ready to do it the right way, and I see her finally getting back into the clothes she wore in high school. That's what I want. I want you to take the client into the future. And if that isn't comfortable, if you can't do it with enough certainty, then tell me what you'd like to see. You know, here's Mary. I'm not really sure if she's going to get the result, but let me tell you what I'd like to see. Who can do that? Name? We hit a stall. We were doing good. Come on, one client. Just tell me what you'd like to see happen with that client in the future.
It's Bianca.
Hello, Bianca.
Hi. I actually have a new client, so this works out perfect for me. Her name is Marta. She's about, I think it's like 51 maybe, and I've known her for a while. She's come to classes of mine, and I live in a very small town, so I've known her in a community and for years, and her body has not changed for years. And she finally, you know how we I finally talked to her as one of my five people a day. I talk all the time, but I talk to her in a different way. I was like, you know that I'm a personal trainer, right? And I can help, you know, these are the things I can think. Anyway, so I used her as one of my five a days. And she's brand new. She's going to start training with me. And I would love to see her change her body because she's strong and she has a great attitude, but she's just one of those people who, oh, I tried this and I tried that, and now I'm going to try that new, what's that new, eat like a caveman diet,
Paleo diet,
you know, and I'm like, well, you know, I don't know if that's really, you know. Anyway, so I would love to see her body change because I've never seen it change, and I see her work hard.
Okay, so Bianca, I'm going to ask you a question. I want a quick gut response, okay?
Yep.
Do you have the power to make that change happen?
Yes.
Okay, and most trainers wouldn't say that, right? Mediocrity wouldn't say that. Mediocrity would go, I can't control what she eats. But you know, and by the way, Bianca is coming through the program again, so she's been through it before, and when she talks about five a day, that's the bottom line best marketing you can do, and we'll talk about that in the program. But just make it a point to introduce yourself to five people a day. And I know at first some people hear that and they go, oh, my God, I could never do that. But I'm telling you, when you start to do it, it becomes something that's unmatched in its ability to grow your business. And I can tell you stories about some of the trainers who went through Be Better who had this fear, and now they're on fire. I mean, literally on fire. Bianca, anything you wanted to add?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, good. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
All right, now, I want to move away from questions, and I want to move into concepts. So I'm going to share a word or phrase, and I'm going to ask you to expand upon it. If, for example, I were to say the want for money, you know, that would be a phrase, like the want for money. Some of you might say, well, that's the root of all evil. Others might say it's a necessary survival mechanism in the 21st century. Okay, so I'm going to give you a concept, and I just want the words that come into your mind. Who wants to go first? Ideally, somebody who hasn't spoken yet.
I'll go, Phil. Sue.
Who is it?
Sue.
Okay.
Cayman Sue, yes.
Okay, listen. Life on your own terms. What does that mean to you? Life on your own terms.
No self-doubt, no worry of living month to month with finances.
Now, you're telling me what you wouldn't have if you lived life on your own terms. You wouldn't have worry. You wouldn't have financial
mm-hmm.
problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what would be great? What would you be doing? What would be significant in your life if you were living life on your own terms? If nobody was getting
people.
In your way?
Helping people live their fullest potential.
Okay, good. I'm going to keep you here for a minute. I'm going to give you another one, Sue. Here we go. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Prosperity. Prosperity. What comes to mind?
Helping people, again, living their full potential and living my full potential.
Okay, so that means a lot to you, helping other people to live up to their potential, right? I mean, clearly that's very attached to your heart, right?
Definitely. Uh-huh.
Okay, good. Thank you for sharing that, Sue. Whoever has noise in the background, if you could hit *6, that would be great. Let me ask somebody else. Who hasn't yet contributed here? Aaron, are you here?
I'm here.
Oh, this is Velma.
Okay, Velma, hold on. Aaron, did I hear you?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, Aaron, I'm going to give you a word. I want your response to it, okay?
Go for it.
Mindset.
Scattered.
Say it again?
Scattered.
Scattered. And does that relate to your mindset or you just the people who you interact with? Why does that word come to mind?
It applies to my mindset and what I observe with others also.
Okay. Let me give you one more. Power. What does that make you think of? You don't have to answer in a word. You can give me a sentence, a phrase, whatever. But if I say power, what does that mean? If somebody says, what does that mean to you, Aaron, power?
Being able to affect my environment, make changes in my environment.
Okay, being able to make the changes you want to make in your environment, right?
Right.
Okay, Okay, good. Now, the main intention of this first call is to get you to better understand and address what we mistakenly call time management. That is the source of our frustration. The way we manage time is a source of our frustration. Aaron wishes he had greater power over time. Isn't that accurate?
Yes.
His mindset would be far less scattered if he had control of time. So we're going to talk about time management, and then, since we're summoning up emotions, I will get you mad before the call is over. Okay. Here's what I know. If you're at a point where you're making enough money to consider this your full-time career, you struggle with time management. Can anybody briefly describe the struggle? Tony, are you here?
Yes.
Do you struggle with time management?
Can you hear me? I'm here.
Yeah. Do you struggle with time management, Tony?
Yes, I do.
Can you give me an example? How does that impact you?
Well, I have a 4-year-old who I have to pick up and drop off on the other side of Staten Island where I live, and I also have a wife that travels a lot for business, so it could be 2 or 3 weeks out of the month where she's gone. So with me and my schedule having to pick him up and drop him off depending upon how the traffic is going across the island, I really have to make sure everything is aligned, and if I have a day where it's raining like this in New York and traffic gets backed up, it presents a big problem for me.
And stress, right? Not only a big problem, but you feel that emotional stress.
Definitely.
If I were to ask you to write down over the course of the next 12 hours, I'm talking to Tony, if I were to ask you to write down, so I said, take the next 12 hours, I want you to just have a pen, and as things come to mind, write them down, every single item, task, goal, and responsibility that pops into your brain. Got it? You got 12 hours, and every time something pops in your brain, we go, I have to do that. You'd write it down. How many do you think you'd have on that list by tomorrow morning?
Oh, dozens, hundreds.
Hundreds, right? Yep. How can you manage that? I mean, I want you to think about the absurdity of it. You've got hundreds of things. You started with dozens, and then you thought about it, and you thought, no, it's much more than that. It's hundreds. How can anybody manage hundreds of things in a day? We can't. We can't. So we're setting ourselves up to feel stressed. Now, there certainly are some obligations. Taking your kid, we have to take your kid, is clearly an obligation. So we have to separate those true obligations from those things that are gnawing at us that appear to be important but really aren't. And we've got to figure out a way to make the pieces fit. Here is a typical list that I will get from personal trainers when I ask them to do this. Number one, figure out how to solve my money problems. That's on their list. They have to figure out how to solve their money problems. Number two, pay my bills. Number three, is somebody being arrested right now? Whoever has a siren in the back, if you could hit star six, that would be great. Number three, add 2 new clients this week. Okay, so I got to figure out how to solve my money problem. That's an important thing. I got to pay my bills or else they're going to come for me like they just came for somebody on this call. I have to add new clients. I have to design my new ad. I have to write my article. I have to design the program for my new clients. I have to reschedule my cancellations. Man, this is a horribly demotivating list. And it stems from cyclical thinking, and this is what trainers do because nobody ever taught us the right way to do things for our benefit. We make everybody and everything more important than ourselves. I mean, look at that list. If you have to figure something out, that's going to take time and an indeterminate amount of time. Then you have to do something, and that brings you face-to-face with a problem because you don't know what to do until you figure something out. Now, I've been frustrated by my challenges over the years with time management. You'll hear me discuss some of those challenges over the 8 months that lie ahead, or 9 months that lie ahead. Right now, I want to share what I have found to be an incredibly valuable tool in alleviating any unnecessary emotional stress, those especially caused by trying to manage time. So if you guys have the Max 10 sheet, you should have it in front of you. If you don't, not a big deal. You'll be able to download it when Stacy posts the notes today. I'll tell you that I hate the phrase time management. I used to chase it. I used to think I wanted it. You know, I want time management. I hate that phrase because I manage enough stuff. I do. I manage people and I manage finances and I manage employees and I manage a client base. I manage a lot of stuff. And I have to manage Stacy. That's a lot of work. So I don't want to manage anything else. I'm tired of managing. I decided that I don't want time management. I want time ownership. So I'm going to give you a quick tutorial, and I'm going to ask you to experiment with using my Max 10. Now, hopefully you have it in front of you. For years, I went to every time management workshop, the Franklin Covey. I bought the day planners. And then I realized I just don't want to manage time. I don't want to manage anything else. I'm managing too much. I don't want to manage anymore. I want to own. So I decided that now I have to find how do I own my time. And we've all made the mistake of giving away our precious time. We've all made that mistake. Someone says, can you train me Saturday? And even though you had plans on Saturday, you go, sure. Because that's what we do. We're trainers. We're good people. You don't go, oh, no, I can't Saturday because I set aside some time for myself. You don't say that. You go, sure. And then you've got to manage your time to make this work. And then before you know it, you start to resent people for taking your time. In other words, now you go there on Saturday to train this person, and you resent them because they made you be here instead of being where you wanted to be. And then, with a little bit of time passing, you have possible clients, and then you have a client base, and then you have former clients, and you have difficult clients, and you have strategic allies that are working, and you have strategic allies that aren't working, and you have employees, and eventually everything and everyone begin to manage you. And what do? You try to manage back. So it's a battle of managing. Everything's trying to manage you, and you're trying to fight back. Oh, wait a minute, I'm going to put this here, I'm going to put that here, and I'm going to put this over here. So I struggled with this. And every 2 or 3 or 4 years, I would do this sort of unclutter. You know, I would realize I'm spread too thin, I got too much going on. I would do this cleaning of all the stuff that I had taken on, but it was never lasting. It was like cleaning a litter box. You know, it's clean until the cat comes back. And once I had things uncluttered, I had a knack for letting lots of cats into my proverbial litter box. So instead of managing time, I wanted to decide what my days are going to be like. Man, how powerful would that be, Aaron, if you could decide what your days would be like? And that crystallization for me, that shift in my mind from saying, I need time management to, I don't want management, I want to decide what my days are going to be like, that gave me the insights to develop my Max 10 system. And I can honestly say I now have it down to a science. Now, even with that, there are times that time messes with me. You know, a flight is delayed, and then everything that comes after that flight is crushed. But with the Max 10, I recover quickly. My Max 10 ensures that if I am affected by controllable or uncontrollable run-ins with time pressures, it never lasts more than a single day. I created this not as a profit opportunity for myself. I never sought out to create a system that I could sell to trainers. I created this Max 10 out of severe frustration, that emotion of frustration. And I'm talking about severe. At a time in my life where I barely had time to breathe. I was going through a drawn-out divorce, and in the process, I had to learn to be a single dad. While that's going on, my business is literally wiped out by a hurricane. The roof is blown off of my studio and office by a hurricane. I had medical issues. I had to meet with lawyers and doctors and a crazy travel schedule and seminars and deadlines. And every night, I would lay in bed, and a little voice in my head would say, you didn't do this, Phil. You didn't do that. Oh, and you didn't do the other thing. And when I would create a to-do list, like Tony, it would be hundreds of items on it. It would be pages and pages. Honestly, at one point I counted, I had 158 items on my to-do list. So I reached a point, I said, I can't live this way anymore. It's not an option. So I started to figure this out. And I asked myself, how many of these 158 things could I really commit to do today? Could I do 150 of them? No way. Could I do 100? No way. Could I do 50? Uh-uh. How many could I commit to? The answer was 10. A list of 10 things is very manageable. And if I plan on doing 10 and I do 12, man, that's bonus. Every day before tomorrow, because my max 10 is for tomorrow, so today I'll do my max 10 for tomorrow. Every day before tomorrow, I will make my list of 10 things I'm going to do, and that's it. Now, here's the initial challenge. Tony still has hundreds of items on his list. So I'm saying, all right, Tony, choose 10. And you're going, what are you talking about, man? I got hundreds. How could I possibly choose 10? I got to do them all. So the challenge is your brain wants to remind you of everything you have to do. So I realized, as my brain was reminding me of this, that I needed to compartmentalize. I needed a place to put things. I couldn't possibly do 158 things in a day, so I had to find a way to prioritize and to choose the 10 that would best serve me. And while at first that was really difficult, now it's second nature. And if you speak to Kelly Calabrese, she will tell you she lives by this. And Marianne Malloy, who just went into Beyond Better, she lives by this. It gives you a sense of genuine control. And it will become second nature for you as well. Now, here's the logic that makes this work so well. If I have a list of 100 things and I only do 10, let's think about that. I have a list of 100 and I only do 10, I feel bad because I missed 90. That's not good. Right? I had this list, and now I'm looking at the list, and I'm going, man, I failed on 90% of it. So I feel bad. And then I go to bed with that voice in my head going, you didn't do this, and you didn't do that. Now, conversely, if I have a list of 10 things and I complete them all, I feel a sense of victory. So think about it. It's just a different emotion. Nothing's really changing in terms of the number of things I achieve. If I achieve 10 out of 100, I feel bad. If I achieve 10 out of 10, I feel good. So it gives me the ability to literally get into my bed at night feeling victorious. Given the choice between going to bed feeling victorious or tortured, I choose victorious. And I don't know if you guys have had it that severe. I'm sure some of you have, you know, where you're laying in bed at night and just things keep popping up. So in going over this with you, I'll share some of the terms, some of the language I've created. Let me start with brain clutter. Brain clutter is made up of those repetitive thoughts that keep bogging you down. You have to make a dentist appointment. You have to make a dentist appointment. It's in your brain. And you can't get to it because you have other things you have to do. But it doesn't go away. And then something else shows up. You got to renew your car registration. I got to go to the dentist. I got to renew my car registration. And then something else happens. And then something else happens. And these clutter your brain. So now they're not even letting you think clearly about what's important. So when I said I have to compartmentalize, I set aside a section on this page where I'm going to take that clutter out of my brain and put it on paper. And I know it sounds bizarre, but I promise you, do this for a week and it will change you. That brain clutter, when you write it down, you feel like it's done. Not that it's completed, but that you don't need to continue to cycle this through your brain. You've got it. You've captured it. It's here. You're not going to forget about it. And it says, brain, you don't have to remind me. The paper will. So that's brain clutter. Then I also have mind pops. Now, they're similar but different. Mind pops, those are ideas that would pop up when I'm driving or eating or daydreaming or in the shower. They just show up in my head, like pops into my head. I go, here's a great idea. And if you act on those things immediately, which I used to do, you decrease the likelihood of creating your list because you've just added something to it. So those mind pops are going to show up, and they're probably good. If you're creative by nature, you want those mind pops. But you got to have somewhere to put them. So now you have a place to put them. And what I find is sometimes I'll have an idea, and it sounds like the smartest idea in the world. Like I'll think of something, and it's a mind pop. And I go, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this thing, you know. And then I write it down. The following day, I look at it, And I go, what a stupid thing. Thank God I didn't do that. So you got to be careful with mind pops, because sometimes they jump in front of rational thought and they seem important. So I write it down, and that gives me at the very least 24 hours that I could look at it again and see if it even makes sense to ever make it into my Max 10. So the brain clutter section and the mind pops are dynamic. In other words, they can be added throughout the day as they show up. Now, I've gone this far. I've actually made up pads for myself. And I carry with me in my little computer bag, I have a clipboard, and on that clipboard is a pad, and the front page of that pad is today's Max 10. So when I'm in my car, it's sitting in the seat next to me. And if I get a mind pop, I write it down. And I know, as I said, it sounds strange until you start to do it, and you develop this new sense of power. So with an understanding now of the purpose of this form, I want you to learn how to better own your time. So I'm going to walk you through how I use it and how I suggest you do. The first thing that you're going to do is, if you look to the right, you have appointments, and there aren't more than five. You should not have a lot of appointments in a day every day. And I think what happens very often is you set up these appointments, then you have to cancel, and you have to reschedule, and then you wind up moving them into the next day where you already had six appointments, and now you have seven. You can't get to them all, so two of them roll forward. I used to have about 15 appointments in a day. Today, I never have more than five. I don't allow myself to have more than five. And rarely will I have more than three. So it gives me a sense of control. You know, three appointments, I can handle that. If I have 15, I'm feeling pressured. I'm feeling stressed. So the first thing you do is you write down your scheduled appointments, because those are the things that you're going to get to. They're scheduled. You should fulfill them. Now, everything that's not on that list is now part of how you're going to use the remainder of your time. We could call that free time for the moment, because it's not taken by a scheduled appointment. So then I go to the bottom of the page, and I write down the have-tos that I'm going to delegate. And on one side of the page, I write down what I have to do, and then on the other side, I write who I'm delegating it to. Stacy's name shows up on there a lot, on my Max 10. And when she calls me in the morning, I have my Max 10 in front of me, and I go this and this and this. And she says, okay. So I've got my scheduled appointments, and now I've written down the have-tos that really aren't going to take much of my time because I'm delegating them. So what I'm left with now is free time. You know that your immediate have-tos will be handled because you delegated them. And now the only thing you have left to do is jot down the 10 things or less. It doesn't have to be 10 that you're going to take care of today. Now, before you get to that, I want to get you in a place of mindset where your mindset is not scattered, where you have control, where you have power over your mindset. So at the top of the page, you write a thought, any thought. I don't care what, just some thought, something that you're thinking or you want to think. It can be, today I will feel like a winner, or it can be, it's a perfect day to change for the better, or it could be, let's go Mets, or it can be, nothing can hold me back unless I allow it to. Any thought that serves you, it just starts to put you in the right mindset. You don't want to go into this exercise angry or frustrated. Then, I'm going to put down a human connection that I will commit to today. And I'm going to tell you why. You know, Facebook started doing this for me, where people start getting in touch with me. And at first, it's kind of cool, like, oh, man, here's this guy I used to play basketball with when I was 7 years old, and he wants to talk to me. You know, and it's kind of cool. But then after a while, I go, I have no interest in him. I have no interest in his life. I don't want him intruding in mine. But what happens is with now emails and phone calls and people can reach you everywhere, you know, there are those people who you'd love to connect with. There's your cousin who you haven't seen in 20 years. There is your best friend from high school that you lost touch with. There are these people who really helped you in your career. There were professors who taught you. There were mentors who taught you. There were students who learned from you. These are the people you want to maintain connections with. And if we leave things random, we lose those connections. So I've made it a point that every day I am going to form or build a human connection. So I just answer the question, who will I connect with today that I would not otherwise have connected with if I were consumed by have-tos? And now it's the opposite of the guy showing up on Facebook. It's me making the choice. Who do I want to connect with? It gives me a sense of ownership. Then you want to write down an outcome. What outcome thrills you? Now, you could take this however you want. You could write down your outcome for the day. You know, your outcome could be as simple as I'm going to complete all 10. Or you could write down an outcome for the week, or you can write down an outcome for the year. You can say, I'm going to expand and have 5 facilities, or you can say, I'm going to have a full client schedule. You can say, I'm going to make $150,000. Whatever the outcome is, it's going to thrill you. You write it down. Because what you're doing is you're pointing your thoughts in the right direction. And finally, before we get to the 10 items or less, I want you to commit to training. I mean yourself. I mean taking care of yourself. Because we've all done that too, where we get so busy, you know, and we're preaching and we're evangelists for exercise. We go, couldn't get to my workout today. I'll do it tomorrow. I got to get up at 4:30 so that I can get to the gym by 5:30 so that I can get my workout in because I have a client at 6:30. And then you're either exhausted or you're sleepwalking in the gym or you miss the workout. So before you choose your 10 items, I want you to put this in here. This is a priority for you. I don't care what it is. It could be just ride my bike. It can be rollerblade around the neighborhood for 30 minutes. It can be back and buys. Just anything that you're going to commit that this will be your workout. Again, you're doing this today for tomorrow. And now you have a clear head, your mindset is aligned, you feel a sense of power, and then you write down the 10 things that you're going to accomplish. You do it before dinner for the day ahead. So my time is 5:30. At 5:30, I devote a few minutes to my max 10, and I mean a few minutes. Because then it frees up my mind, and the page is always handy for mind pops. You know, if later I think of something, I just write it down and done. It's not circulating in my head anymore. I review it within 30 minutes of the time I get out of bed. And what happens is I approach the day with a sense of clarity. I look at my max 10. I know what my day is going to bring me. And I'm thrilled. And you will notice a difference on the days you neglect it. You know, there have been times that I've spoken to Kelly Calabrese on the phone. I'm traveling and the flight is delayed. And I'm expressing my frustration to her. And she goes, you didn't do your max 10 today, did you? And I said, no. Anytime I don't do it, I find myself falling back. So it becomes a very, very important addiction for me. You'll notice a difference. When you become reliant on it, that's good. And you'll notice a difference on the days you neglect it. So it is a powerful tool, and it will serve you in changing time management to time ownership. I'm encouraging you to use it. I can't force you to. But you're not going to really know if it's going to work for you unless you give it a shot. And at first, like anything else, it's going to be uncomfortable. But I feel so strongly about it that I can say, I know that if you use this for a week or 10 days, it'll change your life. Any thoughts, comments, or questions right now on the topic of time management?
I do, Phil. It's Sue.
Okay.
Okay. What if you have 8 to 10 clients a day? I mean, there goes the appointment window.
Is that what you want? Well, this is important. Do you want 8 to 10 clients a day? If you do, then, yeah, you're going to put those down. The whole purpose here is let's design our day, okay? So when I used to have 10 clients a day, I would have good money coming in. But I would really – I came to a point, and I don't say this to be mean, I started to hate some of my clients, not because they were bad people, but really I just didn't want to see them again today, you know? So I realized it's too many for me. It's not that I can't handle it. It's that I can't enjoy it. So now we're talking about an ideal. You're going to have control over where you end up. So the question is, life on your own terms, does that have you training 8 to 10 people a day?
No.
Okay, so there's your answer.
Okay.
Now, I know right now there are questions. They're like, well, Phil, how can I train less? I'm relying on this money, and I'm telling you we're going to take 10 months to answer that question. So for now, you're going to have to write in 8 appointments if that's what you have. But I want you to appreciate that that is real for you whether you put them on paper or not. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you're committed to those times. And on top of that, you have your to-do list. So how are you going to do all of this stuff? So it puts things in perspective when you see it, and it'll help you say, I don't want to have 10 appointments a day. You know, I'd like to have 5. Wouldn't it be great if I could only train 3 clients? Wouldn't this be great? What if you could train 3 clients a day and make the same money you're making now training 10?
Yeah, that'd be great.
And would you want to train 10 if that were an option?
If it were an option, no.
No. So we're going to make it an option.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay? And nothing happens immediately. It's just like, you know, when you put somebody on an exercise program and you ask them to do things they haven't done before. You know, somebody's really mastered standing in place curling a bar. And you go, okay, now I'm going to give you dumbbells and I'm going to put you on a BOSU. And all of a sudden you're going, I can't do this. You go, yes, you can, but you got to learn to do it. And that's what this will be for you. You're sort of stuck in your old habits. And mm-hmm. at first, it's going to take a little bit of rattling to get you out of them. So at first, the Max 10 will rattle you, but then it will become your friend. Okay? Anything else on time management? Okay. As we go through this program, we're going to come to understand the coexistence of sameness and individuality. We are all the same, but we are all different. This is a really important principle for any fitness professional. We are all the same, but we are all different. Because we are the same, we can all grow from a proven curriculum. In other words, I know what in this curriculum is going to help you guys become more successful because you're all the same. But the actions that prove fulfilling will be unique to every one of us. So we are the same, but we are different. Which is why you can have all your clients doing some form of resistance and some form of cardio, because you know they're the same. But the specifics are going to be different. In the first 90 days of the program, you're going to struggle to find your uniqueness. Now, some of you don't believe that right now. You're thinking, I know why I'm unique. I know why I'm different. I know why I'm different. And I'm going to tell you, I've done eight of these groups. This is the ninth, even though it's Be Better 8, there was one called Be Better Group. So this is actually the ninth group that I've conducted. I'm telling you, universally, in the first 90 days of the program, you will struggle to find your uniqueness, even if you think you know it now. At first, it's a struggle because you're stuck in an industry where thinking is limited, where the walls of the box are restrictive. Nobody ever taught you to think about what you really want, at least not professionally. You were guided to think about what you perceive to be realistic, set realistic goals. And in that, you tend to believe that the traits that make trainers trainers are somehow unique. But if all of those trainers have those traits, are they really unique? You'll come to understand you are unique in valuable ways that you haven't yet identified. And once you land on some of these ahas, once you start to really isolate what unique gifts and traits you bring, you're going to find a sense of power that you never felt before. So in starting to touch on this concept, I want to see if someone can fill in the blanks, and I sent this in an email. Many personal trainers blank, and that disgusts me. I am different because blank. Who can answer that? Many personal trainers blank, and that disgusts me. I am different because blank.
This is Tony, Phil.
Hey, go for it.
Many trainers train with their egos, and that disgusts me. I train with a client's best interest in mind, always, no matter what.
Okay, so most personal trainers, it's all about them, right?
Correct.
And what you're saying is you're different because it's all about the client.
Correct.
Okay, good. Here's the second one. There are many fitness options available. One that I particularly find disheartening is blank. In other words, there's a lot of stuff available to people if they want to get fit. But there's one thing that's really disheartening to me, and that is blank. Retaining me as a personal trainer is a better choice because blank. Who can take a shot at that? There are many fitness options available. One that I particularly find disheartening is retaining me as a personal trainer is a better choice because... Somebody tell me one fitness option. And when I say an option, I mean something that people perceive would be an option, whether or not it really is.
This is Jimmy.
Somebody tell me one that you find disheartening. Go ahead.
this is Jimmy, running when they decide to go running for cardio, to do a lot of cardio, to pretty much stop eating, to lose weight, where if they hire me, I can actually guide them and kind of cut down on the cardio, which is really awesome.
So one of the options that you find particularly disheartening is this over-reliance on aerobic exercise, correct?
Right.
And finish this, and I know you did, but I'm going to ask you to do it again. Retaining Jimmy as a personal trainer is a better choice because?
Because I can guide them to actually include the strength training part of it and do the right amount of cardio at the right times, because I do believe there are right times to do the cardio.
Okay, good. Now, I want you, both of you guys to know, Tony and Jimmy, that what you said is noble, what you said is important, what you said is valid, what you said is valuable, but it is not unique. And this is a part of our challenge. Our challenge is you say those things and you mean them. But when people don't mean them, they say them anyway. Look at all of the companies that say we guarantee results. They really don't, but they say it. You know, we deliver results. Results, results, results. Results plus. I guess no result is a result. So I want you guys to realize that. Sure, that makes you noble and that makes you a great trainer and that's important, but it's not what makes you unique. There's something that lies deeper in each one of you, and we're going to identify it. Jimmy, did that summon up any emotion in you at all?
Yes, I just said,
that it's not unique. Did that summon up any emotion in you?
Yes. I guess that for me, when you said that, after you said that, that wasn't unique for me. What I'm always told by a lot of my clients that I actually teach them rather than just train them.
Mm-hmm. Tony, do you teach your clients rather than just train them?
Absolutely.
Aaron, do you teach your clients rather than just train them?
Yes, sir.
Renata, do you teach your clients rather than just train them?
Yes.
See, so it is important, and I'm telling you, it's noble. It's not something you want to get rid of, but it's not necessarily what makes you unique. And when you make that statement, it should summon up some kind of emotion. When you say, I am different because, you'll either feel pride, or you'll feel uncertainty, or you'll feel confidence, or you'll feel something else. But really, it leads to an emotion. And I want you guys now to understand the power of these emotions. Throughout Be Better, we will talk about emotion a great deal. Somebody name an emotion, any emotion that you've personally experienced within the last 3 months. Just give me an emotion.
Anger.
Anger.
Yes. Yes.
And would you say that anger served you or hurt you?
Hurt me.
Hurt you. I want you to learn to take that emotion and get it to serve you. Now, many people believe that our circumstances create our emotions. You go, I was angry because this happened. We've got to change our thinking about that. Only when you fully accept responsibility, that means the ability to respond, something happens. You have an option. I don't know what that option is, but in any given circumstance, you have an option. You have a choice. And you can respond appropriately. You have that ability, but most people never use that ability. They're victimized by things that happen, and it makes them angry. Only when you fully accept responsibility can you understand that in great part, our emotions create our circumstances. Our circumstances create our emotions if we let that happen. But if you're going to be responsible, your emotions create your circumstances. This is an important distinction. Most people go through life victimized by the things that happen. I'm suggesting if you can gain control of your emotions, you can make things happen. If we understand that at any level, then we'll come to realize that gaining control over emotions in ourselves and gaining control over emotions in the people we connect with gives us an immense power to change outcomes. Now, I started earlier talking about frustration, and as we progress, I want to connect you with this anger emotion that some of you feel. And we think of it as negative. If you can get angry at something in your life and find clarity, inspiration, and a sense of power, you're more likely to bring about change. That is, provided you channel the anger and maintain responsibility. Now, at this point, you might go, Phil, you don't understand. Things set me off, you know. Somebody says something to me. It makes me angry. We all have anger triggers. We all have emotional triggers. Things trigger emotions in us. Can anybody name one anger trigger that you have? For me, when someone steals from me or lies to me, I get angry. It's instant. When I find out that somebody lied to me, it's just an immediate reaction. I get angry. But I've learned, and believe me, I had to learn, I've learned not to allow the anger to overtake me. I've learned to use it as fuel. Can anybody here share just one anger trigger?
For me, Phil, this is Renata, it's when I feel disrespected.
Would you be comfortable sharing an example of when that happened?
For example, when someone disrespects my time. For instance, I can have a client who will schedule an appointment. I get to the appointment. They don't tell me beforehand that they're not going to do the session. They tell me after I've already gotten there. That, for me, feels like it makes me angry because it feels like they disrespected my time, that they knew ahead of time that they weren't going to do the session. They could have let me know ahead of time, and they didn't. And it's like they don't consider my time very valuable. I feel disrespected. It makes me very angry.
They are controlling your emotions, and they are controlling your outcomes, and you can't let that happen anymore. Now, you can get angry, but that anger has to summon a change. And remember, I want all of you to know, nothing from this first call is going to instantly change your life. So you're going to be left after this call with many questions. It will take about 90 days until it all starts to kick and you start to put the pieces together. So, you know, expect that a lot of things at this point will kind of roll around in your head before they actually settle in. We all have anger triggers. When Renata feels disrespected, she gets angry. Now, she has a choice. What does she do when she feels angry? Maybe she stifles it. Maybe she keeps it in. Maybe she doesn't let the client know that she's angry. And it may seem like the right thing to do, except for the fact that it's eating Renata up and causing her additional stress and taxing her adrenals. And she'll probably carry the anger forward to the next client. Maybe she's loud and vocal and honest with the client. Maybe that's not such a good idea, because maybe then she loses the client. But if you could recognize that the anger is not a prompt to react, the anger is fuel, you just have to decide how to channel it, then you will come to appreciate those times when you were angry. Not in the moment, but you're going to look back and go, you know what, I needed to get that angry to make this change. Now remember, we are all the same, but we are all different. So knowing that we are all different, we all have different specifics attached to our anger triggers. And we have emotions that are not action-oriented, like depression. That's not action-oriented. It doesn't make you do something. In fact, it's the opposite. It kind of makes you do nothing. Anger is a survival mechanism. I mean, you say anger is a bad emotion. You know, it's poisonous to us. It's toxic. I've heard that. I'm suggesting that it is a survival mechanism. If you ever see angry bees attack an intruder, you're witnessing survival of the beehive. If you see an angry animal defending its young, you're looking at survival of the family. And if you ever see an angry protester actively protesting an action or a change or a government decision, you're looking at an attempt toward the survival of a vision or a mission or a dream. I'll tell you that the greatest tyrants in history were some of the angriest. I'll also tell you that some of the greatest comedians are angry. I think Sam Kinison built his career around anger. Or if you see Dennis Leary, old clips from when he first started, he was angry. And if any of you guys have seen Lewis Black, I think he started on Jon Stewart's show. Now he's everywhere, and he's angry, really angry. And connecting with people because he's oddly building rapport with an emotion they all feel. They just don't know how to express it, so he's expressing it for them. So is anger funny? I guess in that form it can be, but Sam Kinison didn't live a happy life. So while it might be a connector where people can commiserate and go, hey, I'm angry too, it might not be something to cherish for the person who harbors it, unless they too can laugh, or unless they can channel the emotion so that the physical manifestations of anger don't lead them down the wrong path. Like alcohol, caffeine, sleep, exercise, water, and I can keep going. We cannot define any of those things as good or bad. Much depends on the circumstance. Much depends upon how or when it's used. Is caffeine good or bad? Well, it depends how you use it and when it's used. Is alcohol good or bad? It depends. Is anger good or bad? I'm going to say it depends. When I was in Moscow, I toured some of the museums, and I noticed that everybody there had this great reverence for Ivan the Terrible. And I thought, isn't that odd? The Terrible, like, why do they hold up and revere this Terrible? I didn't know who he was prior to that trip, but I found out he ruled Russia in the 14th century. Ivan the Terrible made Russia a power with international reach. He established governing laws. He allowed religion and government to coexist, and he rebuilt Moscow after political sabotage led the city to literally burn down. And when people look at him and say, where was his power was attributed to the anger he developed as a child. So anger served him. Now, did he do mean things? Yes, he did horrible things. So let's not suggest you should emulate the evil things he did. But in the long run, the anger allowed him to build things that have long outlived him. He was a tyrant. He killed his own son. Listen to this. He had the top architects in Moscow design a shrine, and then he ordered that they're blinded so that they could never replicate it. He didn't want those artists to be able to do it anywhere else. So that's a terrible person, I understand. But historically, man, he brought some really good things, and it came from his anger. So much of the success of any tyrant or any conqueror has its foundation in anger. And sometimes it's mischanneled, but it is always a predecessor of action. So whether you lived in the 14th century or you live today, as human beings, we are going to experience frustrations and setbacks and disappointments, and our internal workings will take some of those and convert them into intense inner turmoil. We will experience heightened body tension, and unless you learn to channel it, it will stimulate negative critical thoughts. Renata, is it fair to say that although you've never expressed it, you've really thought about hurting somebody when they disrespected you? Even though you never do it, didn't a thought kind of cross your mind?
No.
No?
I can honestly say no. No, it didn't make me
you
feel
never
like
felt like I want to lash out, like I want to say something hurtful or do something hurtful?
Well, I have felt like that I wanted to say something. I'd want to, yeah, you're right.
You have, right?
I wanted to scream at them. I wanted to say, you know, who do you think you are? Your time's not more valuable than my time.
Haven't you walked away with angry, critical thoughts in your mind? Even though that you might not have expressed them, they're still in your head, right?
Yes, I have.
So this is what I want you to understand. Anger is good because it becomes fuel for action. But if anger is not properly channeled, it will stimulate those negative critical thoughts and shut you down. So realize that whether you're able to channel the emotion or not will determine what that anger brings you. If a goal is blocked or if danger threatens, then anger may be your best tool to eliminate the obstacle. And in that case, it would be good. Anger is built into our basic biology to alert us to the need for effective action to deal with danger. And anger in itself can be a trigger. It can be a trigger for behavior that leads to solutions. And sometimes, if we do this right, thrilling solutions. I want you to think of a story that we all know the ending to. You know, if, for example, I were to use the story of Snow White, I would say a wicked queen hated the princess Snow White, so she sent her to the woods to be killed. That was me. But Snow White found refuge in a house with 7 tiny little men. Okay, now, we all know the beginning of that story. If you think about that beginning and only the beginning, and somebody said, I want you to rewrite that story. You can take it in any direction you want. Here is this princess now living with these 7 little men. Couldn't you create a very different story? One of you might decide that one of the dwarfs was a serial killer. That would probably be Tony who decides that. Another might decide Snow White found herself oddly attracted to little men. I'm putting that one on toss-up. And a third might decide that Snow White hooked up with Sneezy and he grossed her out so badly by sneezing that she cheated on him with Dopey. So if we were to do that, if we were to say, you know what, we all write our own stories, then every story would end differently. Well, here's your chance to write the next chapter in your own story. In this program, you're not going to set goals. Just like I don't want to manage time, I don't want to set goals. And I think when you understand that, you will share that sentiment. You won't set goals, but you will establish and you will commit to outcomes. So you'll know the beginning of your story because you're there right now. And once you get clear on the dream, once you get clear on the outcome, which will likely take a few months for most of you, then all you have to do is fill in the gaps. In other words, you know the beginning. The beginning is right here, right now. You're going to decide where the end of the story will be. And then we just fill in the middle. Now, if you saw the email I sent, it had all of the letters jumbled in every word, yet you were still able to read it. It said, would anyone be able to read this if the letters weren't in the correct order? And they're not in the correct order. Here's what's interesting. If you put the first letter where the first letter should be and the last letter where the last letter should be, people's minds automatically fill in the middle. Understand that. If you have a beginning and an end, your mind has the ability to create the middle. In other words, even though those letters are in the wrong place, because your mind is so conditioned to look for that word, you give it the first and you give it the last and it knows to fill in the middle. So this is an example of tapping into the mind's ability to fill in gaps. If it knows the beginning and it knows the end and it has some context, it automatically, without conscious thought, fills in the middle. The crux of the Be Better program is a concept you'll later come to know as creative tension. I want you to think of it as a rubber band, but the rubber band that runs as a line between where you are now and where you want to be. It's the line, the elastic, stretchable line between the beginning of your story and where you want to end up. And it's the power of the mind to fill in that gap that allows creative tension to serve us. We need to know the beginning, and we need to know the end. And somehow, if we remain focused on where the story's going, we wind up right where we needed to. The mind has a way of filling in the gaps. So the beginning of your story right now is the source of your anger. Anger is uncomfortable, especially if you were taught, you know, pursue a path of calm. You know, if you get angry, count to 10, think positive. I want you to get comfortable with anger. Not because I want you to be angry, but I want you to use anger when it shows up. And up until now, I might have used the terms anger and frustration interchangeably, but they're different. There's a distinction. You'll all easily admit to having experienced frustration, and something in you wants to prevent that from turning into anger. So if you realize that frustration can turn into anger, then you'll realize that the two ideas, anger and frustration, are different but related. So I want everybody to buy into the difference so we can begin using the terms as they are intended. Now, I want to tell you, I'm at about the 90-minute mark, and most of these calls will run about 90 minutes. If you blocked out 90 minutes and you have to go, I'm telling you it is perfectly okay. At the end of the call, I will give directives. There will be two directives. They're simple. I'm going to ask everybody to do them. If you have to leave the call now or you have to ever leave the call early, it's okay because shortly after the call, the notes will be posted and the audio will be posted. So you could play back any portion of this, and you'll also get the notes. So if you hang up now, just come back and check the directives. All of the meat that you needed to get from today's call, you've got it. You understand time management, and you understand that we're going to start to channel emotion. Now, with that said, I'm going to keep going for a little while. So if you want to hang with me, you should. Anger and frustration are two emotions I want you to understand. The dictionary says frustration is a feeling of annoyance at being hindered or criticized. You get frustrated because something's hindering you, something's standing in the way of your goal. Now, a feeling translates to an emotion. and emotions can be channeled into other emotions. So if you look at any story, changes in emotion drive the storyline. And in almost every story, frustration is a predecessor to the ultimate outcome. The prince sees the Sleeping Beauty, and he wishes that he could have his way with her, but he can't because she's fast asleep. Frustration. The poor prince is frustrated. Out of that frustration, he does the only thing he can think of. He kisses her. And in fairy tales, she wakes up. Now, our stories aren't always fairy tales, so we're going to get some twists and turns in there. In other stories, the frustration leads to anger. The slaves turn their frustration into anger and begin a rebellion leading to freedom. That's an old story. It's happened many times, right? The slaves take their frustration, they turn it into anger, and they begin a rebellion leading to freedom. Now, you can apply that storyline to almost any ethnicity if you're willing to shift the word slavery to discrimination or persecution. Had that frustration not turned into anger, there would have been a very different ending. In every one of those cases, frustration channeled into anger was necessary for breakthrough. We would not have a United States of America if our forefathers were not angry. So don't mistake my emphasis on this emotion of anger as a desire to make everyone angry for anger's sake. It is a desire to get you to understand the full spectrum of emotions that can serve us and give you a sense of control over these emotions. Here's a trick in channeling anger, and it's an important one. Don't focus on the cause of the anger. Focus on the outcome and the power of the emotion. Don't focus on the cause of the anger. So Renata gets disrespected. She's angry. Even though she says she would never actually do anything to hurt anybody, she does get these critical thoughts in her mind, and she walks away from that interaction with negative thoughts in her head. And she's focusing on the cause of the anger. She's thinking that so-and-so. I can't believe she disrespected me. She's focusing, and that because she's focusing on the cause, it's causing that anger to remain or even escalate. So what she has to do is walk away from that and focus on the outcome. She has to start to learn to ask herself, what would I like to happen? You know, I can't go back and change what just happened, but what would I like to happen? What is the outcome that I want? And then the power of that emotion will drive her. Sometimes it's a policy change. You know, I have a policy. If somebody doesn't give 48 hours notice for a cancellation, they forfeit their retainer. They pay for the session. Now, that policy came out of anger. It served me, but I used to get angry because people would do that to me. You know, they'd call me in the morning. They'd go, man, I was out partying last night. Got to skip today. And I'd go, okay. That's what I'd say. What was going on inside my head was very different. So if you focus on the cause of the anger, you find yourself heading toward dysphoria. Dysphoria is the opposite of euphoria. Or you wind up in what I call a reptilian vent. I'm going to tell you what I mean by that. And I can prove that in our society, both are common, dysphoria and a reptilian vent. Here's why I say don't focus on the source of the anger. Because people get angry at computers and dishwashers and cars and traffic jams and cell phones and traffic lights, and none of these things can respond to anger. So if you focus on them, the only one who's getting hurt is you. If you focus on a non-responsive source, the anger amplifies. You have to channel it by directing your mind, your reticular activating system, toward an outcome. What do you want? Now, I said I can prove to you that these things are common, anger leading to dysphoria and anger leading to this reptilian vent or rant. Here is my evidence that anger makes people dysphoric. Dysphoria is the condition necessary for a doctor to prescribe an antidepressant. There are tens of millions of prescriptions for selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors in the United States alone. So there's the evidence. I mean, we have a whole population, tens of millions of prescriptions from people who suffer from dysphoria because they let that anger turn into something else, something negative. And as far as the reptilian vent, think of think of how people describe other people who became angry. You know, they'll go, he was so mad he blew up. Or they'll go, I never saw him boil over before. Or they'll say he exploded, or he blew a fuse, or he blew a gasket, or she blew her stack. He flew off the handle. He hit the ceiling. These are creative descriptions of reptilian vents. A reptilian vent means you're going to that reptilian part of your brain. You're bypassing rational thought. And you're just purely reacting. You don't want to do that. It is dangerous. It is dangerous to your outcome. It is dangerous to your health. So you're not going to let that happen. You're going to learn to take anger and channel it. You're going to learn to take anger and use it. You're going to take frustration and turn it into anger and use that to lead you to the goals that you seek. Now, anger is ineffective when it results in you doing something intentionally to cause somebody to fail or get hurt. So even though just by nature we may sometimes have that impulse or thought, we're never going to do that. Anger can be very effective when it prompts change. Okay, I'm going to give you the two directives. Any thoughts, comments, questions about anything at all? And Velma, I know I haven't heard from you. I heard you at one point, and then I cut you off, and you never came back. Jen, are you here? Jen, Velma, Christy?
I'm here.
Carissa? Jason Minnick? Kevin? If any of you guys are out there, say hello. Okay, good.
Jimmy. Hello.
Jimmy is here.
Okay. You getting angry, guys? Can you find the value of this? Can you find the things that frustrate you? When you look around and go, I'm frustrated by the field. I'm frustrated by the way trainers behave. I'm frustrated by mediocrity. I'm telling you, get angry. And we're going to use that anger to help you decide how you're going to be so different than them that nobody ever thinks you're the same animal. Can anybody here describe a source of anger? Just anything that is actually in your life, a source of your anger. You know, I said some people get angry at their computer. The computer becomes a source because it's freezing. Renata gets angry when somebody disrespects her. Can anybody share just one thing that is a source of anger for you? I hear moaning. Come on, what makes you mad? What makes you mad? Just tell me one thing that's a source of anger for you. Is it your next door neighbor? Is it the guy who sold you your car? What makes you angry?
Well,
is it the dog barking next door all night long? What is it? Tell me.
Well, this is Jimmy, and like just now, as we're here on this call, I had a client to just text me. She has a 6 o'clock appointment, and she just texts me, says she can't make it. Can she reschedule tomorrow? So I'm texting her back and saying, no, you lost that session.
Now, is she going to be charged for today's session?
Yes, she will.
And is that a policy that she already understands?
Yes, but sometimes they, you know, even if the policy is there, they, you know, for some reason, they think they still should get that session, you know.
Okay, we'll talk more about that, but I want you to realize every good policy came out of anger. I'm telling you, every good policy came out of something that made somebody frustrated or angry, and they said, we got to make a policy for this. So you need to design policies within your business that support you, so if somebody does that, they're not hurting you.
You know what makes me angry, Phil?
Tell me.
That I have to work so damn hard in order to make it a really good living at this business. That I have to work pretty much almost 7 days a week in order to make a decent living. That makes me really angry.
Okay, so now here's what I want you to do. I want you to take that source of anger and follow it with an outcome that would prove thrilling. Okay, in other words, you're saying, I am so angry at the fact that I have to work so hard to just get what I'm getting right now. Now I want you to tell me what would be a thrilling outcome That if you could move past that anger, if you could use that anger, where would you end up where you would go, hey, this is a good place. I'm not angry now.
I would only work 5 days a week. I'd take a vacation.
Where would you go on vacation?
I would go to a destination spa.
And how long would you go for?
For a week.
And how would that make you feel?
Fabulous.
Beyond the momentary fabulous of being at a spa, how would it make you feel when you started to think about how your career has changed? Angry?
No, it wouldn't make me angry at all.
No? What would it make you?
It would make me feel a sense of control, a sense of freedom, a sense of gratification.
Now,
a sense of freedom. That I was succeeding.
A sense of freedom, is that a good emotion?
For me, absolutely.
Is that an emotion you'd like to live with all the time? Would that be life on your own terms?
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's what I want you to understand. It is all changeable. So when you say, I'm angry that I have to, take away the have to. I'm angry that right now, the way I'm doing the things I'm doing, I have to work this hard. Because it's changeable. I promise it is.
Okay.
I'm telling you from my own life and thousands of trainers I've worked with and people I know in business, you don't have to work as hard as you're working now to make what you're making. But you've got to change some things.
I'm angry that right now, the way that my business is structured, I'm having to work very, very hard just to live okay in New York, and that can be changed.
Good. Good. Now, somewhere in the next 10 months, you're going to be at a destination spa.
I'd love it.
Hold on to that. I mean, I'm not just pulling that out of the air. It's something you want. I'm going to show you how to get it.
Okay.
But you got to get angry at your present circumstance so you can move past it. Make sense?
Makes perfect sense to me. That's why I'm here.
Okay, so this is the first of the two directives. I want everybody to do two things before the next call. One, describe a source of anger and follow it with an outcome that would prove thrilling. So as an example, I'm angry about the fact that I am not financially rewarded in line with the value I bring. I'll use that anger to step out of my comfort level, create a new client base, and earn $100,000 in 2012. That's what I want. I want you to identify the source of your anger and appreciate that anger. And then I want you to now use it to channel an outcome that would thrill you. The question becomes, if I could take this anger and use it as fuel, where would it lead me? So that's the first directive. Describe a source of anger, just one, and follow it with an outcome that would prove thrilling. Second, after you've identified a source of anger and an outcome, do that first. I want you to limit your to-dos for tomorrow to 10. Just for today, do it today for tomorrow. 10 to-dos. And try to use that form every single day. And I'm telling you it's hard because you're going to write down 10 and then you're going to think of another. And you're going to want to make it 11. Don't. That's a mind pop. And you're going to go, but I have to do this. I know, but you think you have to do all of the things. So let's choose the 10 you're going to do. And if you by accident do 11 things, wonderful. So that's it. Those are the directives. I want you to recognize the power of this week to literally design your universe as it will exist 8 or 9 or 10 months from now. Growth is exciting, and personal training is, in my mind, the most noble and important career we can commit to. So let's enjoy the growth, let's enjoy the tension, let's enjoy the relationships, and let's enjoy the transition into 2012. 2012, I'm promising you, it is the year in which your story leads you to create an entirely new chapter. Any final thoughts, comments, questions at all about anything?
No comments.
Nope. I have one. On the 10 to-do list,
yep.
Does that include the clients that we train?
No. Those become appointments. Scheduled appointments go to the right side of the page.
Okay.
But when you decide, you're going to start to think and you go, okay, I don't want to work this hard and I don't want to do all the things I'm doing. I want to change some things. So in order to change some things, I have to do this and I have to do that and I have to do another. And that's where the list starts to grow. And I'm going to say of that list, I want you to just choose 10 that you're going to get to today.
Okay.
Okay. Anyone else? Questions at all?
No.
Okay. If you guys, if you're in a little bit of a head spin, it's okay. I expected that. If you're a little confused, it's okay. I expected that. I'm telling you, it's going to take a few months for you to get some clarity as to how all of this plays in. But what I'm giving you today is access to the fuel that will drive you. We're going to spend some time where you're going to figure out exactly where you want it to drive you to. For now, I just want you to choose one source of anger and one outcome that would prove thrilling. And since I started Be Better now close to 4 years ago, I've ended every call with the same words. So I'm about to conclude the call right now with those very same words. The notes will be posted by the end of the day, and so will the audio. So you'll be able to access it. Please do the directives today. Get in the habit of doing that. They don't take a lot of time. They take minutes. But if you add them to your to-do list, then they become burdensome. So until we speak again, here are those two words. Be better.